Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I'm just a little dreamer.
Nothing but a dreamer. Boy, that should give you a big clue if you haven't already looked at the title of this episode as to who we're talking about this week, but it's Supertramp. Prog rockers, actually, the description I heard a couple days ago that I think is perfect is theater pop.
That's actually really good, because that's a good combination of prog elements. But I think if we're going to do anything, it's that poppy prog stuff we've talked about in the past. These guys fit that perfectly.
It is like right in the middle of that Venn diagram of overlap of pop and prog.
It's like King Crimson's catchier little brother.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Like super accessible, super radio friendly, and but still super proggy, especially when you get into the deep cuts, the stuff that doesn't make it into singles. They get really into it, right into it.
Yep.
So will we. Why don't we get right into it? Let's talk about this band. They formed in London in 1969. So did I.
You formed in London in 1969?
Well, part of me formed in London. My dad was British. My mom was Hungarian. So technically, I guess I formed in the U.S. from... Let's go on. It was founded by Roger Hodgson and Rick Davies. They blended, as we mentioned, progressive and pop elements together.
And a fair number of lineup changes happened. So just heads up on that. And I don't know how many I mentioned. I wrote these notes a while back, but... there are a number of them, and just be aware that's a thing that happened.
For sure. But I mean, as you think of the band and you think of their vocalists, Roger Hodgson and Rick Davies are the high voice and the low voice, the scratchy voice that you're in the band.
I still now, even more than ever, hold back to the comment I made last week, which was these guys are like the British
Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah. More radio friendly though.
Yeah. But there's lots of similarities, lots of parallel lines.
Yeah, for sure. Davies was the only consistent member of the band from start to finish, but other longtime members were Dougie Thompson, Bob Seidenberg, and John Helliwell. Stanley, Sam, August, Macegus. Let's say Macegus. Macegus. A Dutch millionaire provided Davies a chance to form his own band. Then he gathered Hodgson, Richard Palmer, and Keith Baker for this group. They initially called themselves Daddy, but they quickly changed it to Supertramp, which is only slightly less
creepy.
Yeah, I'm going to go see Daddy tonight. Oh, who are you seeing Daddy with?
They're opening for Sugar.
Yeah, right? Yes. They were one of the first groups signed to A&M Records in the UK. They released their first album, self-titled, 1970s Supertramp. It was released in July of that year in the UK, but it didn't make it to the US until 1977.
Sometimes this is published under the title Now and Then.
The album was recorded between 12 a.m. and 6 a.m. because the band felt like there was some quote-unquote magic to recording at night, which is odd because usually you hear... nothing good happens after midnight.
No.
As the band had more songs from subsequent albums, only Home Again and Surely remained in the set list from this album.
Time when the blame went to you, please forgive me. But the truth is, my friend, that the world isn't quite as I thought it to be. Oh, no, I wish... back home again.
The next year, they released Indelibly Stamped, 1971. This marked a more direct rock sound. Traveled is the only song on this album that ties in style back to the prior albums.
Catching upon a familiar gaze. Everyone lives by do or die. There's no one with time to laugh or cry. There's no one to tell us what we're living for.
The cover photograph features a tattooed torso and arms and legs of a topless woman. This is the first Supertramp album issued in the U.S., but A&M pasted two gold stars over the nipples.
So somebody actually had to sit there with each copy of the album at A&M Records and position those stars. Or I guess they probably have a machine that, if they have a machine that can put those stickers on that say contains the hits, blah, 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 I guess they could probably do the same thing with the nipple stars.
Or they just had some intern that was on nipple star duty.
Just nipple duty. Oh, nipple, 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 nipple. What do you do for a living? Paste stars over nipples.
Not in real life. Just on pictures.
Just on album covers. So Blind Faith, you got to do it on that album. There's probably a bunch. I looked at that album cover. I mean, it's pretty risque, especially when you consider it's 1971. These days, an album cover like that, as well as those tattoos, I mean, it's a lot of tattoos, would be nothing. Maybe at a Walmart, they'd have to do something to cover those up. But for the most part, 1971 sensibilities, that's a pretty risque album cover.
Yeah. They were pushing boundaries.
Have its own way. Lay me down to pastures and I'll pay for all my sins. Pleading for mercy, my counsel begins.
It was as they entered the studio for the next album, the introduction of the Wurlitzer piano would have its impact on the band.
The lineup that was put together for this album would stay together for the next 10 years.
So this is a solid lineup. That Wurlitzer piano, by the way, I mean, if you're trying to think of what that sound is, the beginning of Oh Darling on Breakfast in America is a good example. It starts off with solo Wurlitzer piano. Very, very, very recognizable instrument.
It's almost a signature sound for them. Because when I hear it, I totally instantly think of them. I don't care who's playing it. It's them.
Definitely is a signature sound. That's a dead-on description. Because, yeah, you hear that, and I don't care what band you're hearing, your mind immediately goes to Supertramp, for sure.
Crime of the Century, Dreamer, all those songs feature it. I mean, you can't. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
It's a very jazz piano-y 1970s kind of sound. I want to say like Leon Russell had some stuff with that. Matthew Wilder. There were times that I was thinking, oh, is this a Supertramp song? Nope, it's a Matthew Wilder song. Even the guy looks like.
It's kind of the soundtrack to those organ stores in the mall in the 70s before they kicked on the little band.
Oh my God, I remember like there were stores in the mall that all they sold were Wurlitzer organs. Uh-huh. With the foot pedals and the levers that would determine the sound you were going to get.
Yep.
Oh my God. Yeah. Have a Inagata DeVita pipe organ right there in your house. Perfect. That lineup, by the way, we mentioned is Dougie Thompson on bass, Bob Seibenberg on drums, John Helliwell on sax and keys, along with Davies and Hodgson on vocals, of course. That first album with that lineup is 1974's Crime of the Century. Such a great album. They entered the studio knowing that they needed a hit record, and they got it with this one. Standards like Dreamer and Bloody Well Right both charted well in both the UK and the US. I remember thinking, what a British sound, like what a British phrase to hear for that.
Yeah.
Of lust, greed, and glory. Rip off the mask and let's see.
1975, they followed it up with Crisis? What Crisis? Feels like a Mad Magazine fold-in. This actually had to be recorded very quickly between tours, and it was made up of leftover songs. And in later years, the band feels like this was their worst album. I might disagree. No matter how they felt, it was a UK top 20 and a US top 50 album.
And none of the singles actually charted.
Not a surprise. 1977, they followed it up with Even in the Quietest Moments. This album produced the hit Give a Little Bit. which charted in the top 20 around the world, including number 8 in Canada.
I'll give a little bit, I'll give a little bit of my love to you. There's so much that we need to share, so send a smile.
It's a criminally underrated album. Breakfast in America gets all the attention, but this album, I feel, is start to finish solid. I'll talk a little bit about Breakfast in America in a minute, but this one feels like it's solid.
So I'm starting to think that you might be becoming a epic song convert, because last week you had your epic song, and this week you get an album that actually has an epic song as its featured piece.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Fool's Overture. And then the title track, even in the quietest moments, got a fair amount of airplay. But let's talk about that Fool's Overture.
Yeah, so it's crazy that it got airplay, because that's 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that the DJs put on while they go to the bathroom and grab some lunch. Sure.
Exactly. It's like, oh, I got a visitor. Cool. Let me put on Fool's Overture by Supertramp.
I got a meeting with the boss. Here we go. We got 11 minutes.
I still only picture WKRP in Cincinnati. When I think about radio stations in the 70s, that's what I imagine.
Oh, yeah. It's me like, too. Yeah. Me too.
No
yeah.
carts. It's all albums and a red light and Andy Travis on the other side of the glass shaking his head.
And Dr. Johnny Fever and Venus Flytrap.
That's right. Exactly. And cute Bailey Quarters.
Yes. Yes. Bailey. Bailey.
We all love Bailey. We were supposed to like Lonnie Anderson, but we all loved
Bailey. Well, it's because Lonnie was out of our reach. We felt like Bailey was attainable.
Right. Well, Herb Tarlick couldn't figure that out.
Yeah.
1979, they released Breakfast in America. You know, there's like a whole generation who don't know any of the people that we were just talking about right then.
Okay, Google WKRP. Where is WKRP streaming? Is it?
I don't know if it is or not, but at the very least, Google Thanksgiving episode WKRP.
Yes.
And watch, I'm sure somebody's
got the whole episode on YouTube. That's on YouTube. That's on YouTube. In fact, I had my mother-in-law watch it a year ago, and she sat there holding my phone, giggling like an idiot while she watched that episode.
Les, are you there? Les isn't there. Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les. You just tuned in. The Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live tickets.
If you've never seen any episode of WKRP in Cincinnati, that is the Super Nazi episode. That is the I'm out of the contest episode.
Yep.
That's the one to watch. Yep. All right. Breakfast in America. This is by far considered to be their most popular album. And with, you know, rightly so. It is a powerhouse of popular songs, singles, and even feels, it may not be a concept album, but it feels at times like it's a concept album.
We spent a lot of time talking last week about 5.1 mixes. Well, this one got a Blu-ray of it in 2013, and it's pretty spectacular.
That's cool. It also got a Coverville treatment back in the relatively early days of Coverville. I was doing this thing called Open Stage where amateur and indie musicians that I was working with for songs, who had submitted songs, I'd reach out to them and say, do you want to cover a song from Breakfast in America? We're going to just put it on the site. People can download it for free. And me and the artists put out a track by track cover album of Breakfast in America. And people can still go to Coverville and download it for free.
Oh, good stuff on there. Very cool.
Because I didn't think about how good Even in the Quietest Moments was. It's not really that. It's the Breakfast in America is it's an eminently coverable album.
Well, and also when you think of Supertramp, either you're thinking their greatest hits album.
Yeah.
Or you're thinking of Breakfast in America. Those are the only two really. Yep. And if you're in the know, then Crime of the Century. But first blush, it's Breakfast in America and their greatest hits album.
Right. For sure.
You can't. That's what regular people think of. The fact that you and I have different opinions is because we're nerds.
Right. Nope, that's true. It's just because we just spent a whole week with Supertramp and it's all fresh. Anyway, the songs, like Logical Song, Goodbye Stranger, Take the Long Way Home, Breakfast in America.
So Take the Long Way Home was one of the first songs I ever played live in concert as a harmonica player. It was one of those things where I'm like, I was playing in a cover band and we had all the right people for it. And I'm like, hey, let's do this one. So we worked on it and we did it and a couple of Blues Traveler songs. You know, there's a cover of Rollin' and Tumblin' we did, but Long Way Home was right there at the top of the set list.
That's cool. And that's got such a classic riff, harmonica mm-hmm. riff that opens the song. That kind of fading in of the other instruments. So good. 1980 Paris, they released as a live album. This one broke the top 10 in both the US and the UK. A live version of Dreamer from that album reached number one in Canada. I actually listened to a lot of that. It sounds good. And it is a good mix. Like for an album that came out, or for a concert that was within a year of this massive album of theirs, you'd think that just about every song from Breakfast in America would be represented on there. But at least on the live album, there's only three or four tracks from Breakfast, and they go into stuff from all of the previous albums, even some of the older stuff, which is surprising. Around this time, Hodgson wrote and released a solo album called Eye of the Storm, which would eventually get released about 5 years later in 1984. Before recording Breakfast in America, the band had moved to Southern California. Roger Hodgson had moved up to Northern California with his family. And this separation widened a gap that had already been forming in the band. In 1982, they released Famous Last Words. I like their use of ellipses in their album titles. Even The Quietest Moments ends with an ellipses. Famous Last Words begins and ends with ellipses. It's interesting. On Famous Last Words, Davies and Hodgson had trouble working out musical ideas for this album. Not acrimony. That's the opposite one I'm thinking of, right? More problems for the band.
Yeah.
And honestly, for me, listening to Famous Last Words, it's like, God, how do you follow up breakfast with this boring meal, with this boring lunch?
And I think it's funny how many bands are accused of having a sophomore slump. I think mm-hmm. Famous Last Words was their sophomore slump.
For sure.
Because the cliff they fell off of for Famous Last Words after Breakfast was kind of significant.
Really is. There were a couple hits on this album. It's Raining Again and My Kind of Lady. It's Raining Again has to be their worst song. It's so mamby-pamby, sing-songy. It's like Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney. It's got that, like, I wrote this song in 5 seconds kind of quality to it.
Well, and also, I don't want it to sound cute. I want it to sound like I'm being kind of harsh. There's a sure. childishness about it. It sounds like it's from a kid's show.
It totally does.
Bert and Ernie would sing this to each other.
No doubt. I mean, it's absolutely, and I think that's what drives me nuts about it, is that you go from a band that did so many songs with really clever lyrics, and especially Breakfast in America, and so much emotion and so much power. And this is so surface level, yawn-inducing. It bummed me out, especially re-listening to it. It's like, oh yeah, Famous Last Words. How come I can't think of anything on this album? And then it started playing. I'm like, oh yeah.
All right, give me a minute to change my top five list and remove that song. Hold on.
I know you didn't include It's Raining Again in your top five. I know you didn't. After the album was released, Hodgson left the band to spend more time with his family and to work on solo projects. It's Raining Again feels like a solo project.
Yeah.
Of his. And I even think that the music video is just him. And so it probably wasn't surprising.
Oh, maybe when he's saying he's losing a friend, he's talking about his buddy.
Maybe. Yeah. Talking about Davies. Sure. 1985, they released Brother, Where You Bound. This was a deliberate move away from the pop albums that they had been releasing. It's funny, I had the audio cassette of this album, and it was the first one I ever remember getting where the label, the front cover of the album, was printed sideways on the big panel that you open up. You know, usually on the homemade tapes, it's where you write down all the tracks mm-hmm. that are on it. But mm-hmm. on other cassettes, you'd get the album cover square because it was a portrait deal. Mm-hmm. And then you'd get the album title underneath it and maybe song listings underneath that. But this one was like, they just blew up that image of the evolution, that kind of stylized evolution, and put it sideways on the label. And for whatever reason, that felt really weird to me. And it's also kind of a weird thing to remember. But every time I see that album cover, I think of that cassette like, oh yeah, I was thinking that was so cool because it was sideways on the album. Anyway.
Wow, you channeled your inner Otto there for a minute.
I totally did. Yes, I meant to.
And it's gonna bust. I think people with your head.
It included the single Cannonball, of course, the title track, Brother, Where You Bound, and the 16-minute epic Cold War.
Which is Brian's favorite song on the album.
I do really like it, actually.
But it actually featured guitar solos from David Gilmour of Pink Floyd. So we're covering Pink Floyd's extracurricular work this season.
We really are, yeah. We talked about him with Porcupine Tree, uh-huh. too, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. There was a 20-minute film of the title track that was made to help promote this album. This album, by the way, feels to me like Supertramp getting influenced by the direction that Dire Straits was going at the time.
Yeah.
If you compare their earlier stuff to being more poppy, they're like, dude, I really like what Knopfler and Dire Straits are doing. Let's see if we can do something like that.
Yeah.
It feels like it. A couple of years later, they released Free as a Bird. This is a very synth-heavy album. Feels to me like late 80s Billy Joel, post-Glass Houses.
That's not exactly the best comparison to make. I mean, it's a good comparison, but it's not
an accurate comparison, yeah, but yeah, not a... But
flattering a, one.
Yes. That's kind of what it feels like to me is like Uptown Girl era Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Not great. I'm Begging You, the song, hit number one on the dance charts. Yes, that's right. I said the dance charts.
Let's start anew. All my fears are wrong. I was too headstrong. Now I'm missing you.
This style change, by the way, of theirs was not well received.
As you can tell, just us two monkeys talking about it.
Right. Yeah.
With this tour, they also dropped all the songs that were written by Hodgson to help solidify the difference. This did not go over well with fans. And in 1988, they had reintroduced his songs back into the lineup at the set list.
Yeah. Can you imagine the Beatles? Let's say they continue to tour after Lennon left or McCartney left. And the rest of the band decided, we're not going to do any of the songs that he wrote.
Yeah.
It feels like, I mean, I know you need his vocals, or maybe you don't need his vocals. Talk about that in a second. Man, to just say, yeah, we're not doing Take the Long Way Home. We're not doing Give a Little Bit or Dreamer. I don't know. I'd walk out of a concert like that.
Yeah, that'd be a tough pill to swallow if you heard going in that, oh yeah, we're not covering anything from Crime of the Century or Breakfast in America. I'm like, well, then what's right. The point of seeing Supertramp?
They did release that live album in 1988 that reintroduced those songs back in. You're not going to market a live album either that don't have those tracks. In 1993, after a special dinner honoring Jerry Moss, where Hodgson and Davies performed, the two of them actually started working together again. But that didn't last very long, and Hodgson was not on the next album. That album was called Some Things Never Change, and it was released in 1997.
That I'm really sure.
had a much more solid return to the earlier Supertramp sound. It's actually really good. And it's funny because they have Davies brought in a female vocalist to kind of do the harmony vocals that Hodgson had been doing in earlier albums. You Win, I Lose was the single released from this album. Oops, didn't realize that. It peaked at number 63. I might have really liked that song.
It's okay. It's not hit worthy, so you're still good.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. It wasn't on the greatest hits album, yeah. I looked. It Was the Best of Times is the name of a live album they released in 1999. And another one two years later is Everybody Listening, released in 2001. In 2002, they released the last album, album of new material called Slow Motion. I try to go so fast. It's easy to lose sight, and then the moment's past. Go easy. Go easy, baby. And was only available in North America by mail order. From their website. The song Gold Rush was a leftover from the Crime of the Century days, but they had never successfully recorded it before. And AllMusic.com wrote that it would have been a great album if not for the shoddy production. Ouch. Followed that up with a 2006 live. No, a 2006 live album that was live 1997.
Sorry for the typing confusion.
No, that's all right. I messed that up. And in 2010, they released 7010 Tour live album. The tour was in commemoration of the 40th anniversary of their very first self-titled album. And yet another band that has rumored to have lost a lot of material, not even rumored, they lost a lot of material in that 2008 fire at Universal.
That fire has been more devastating to the subject of this show than I think.
Pornography. Yeah. Yes. Kind of is. Yeah, exactly. Comes up a lot.
We've been accidentally covering that fire now for 3 years.
If you ever had any doubt that this show is not sponsored by Universal, that should solidify it right there. Hammond, tell me about some of their accolades.
They have exceeded 60 million sales worldwide. They've got two diamond certified albums in Canada. Crime of the Century is listed as one of the greatest prog albums of all time by Rolling Stone. Breakfast in America has won two Grammys in 1980, and it was certified quadruple platinum. It has more than 4 million copies sold alone in the U.S. And then Dreamer actually made an appearance in the live-action Rocky and Bullwinkle film that's gone down as a classic of live-action / animation hybrid films of all time.
Yeah, hallmark of right. And the sad thing is, it's like Robert De Niro, yeah. Right? Wasn't he?
He was in it.
Boris.
Yeah.
Can't remember who Natasha was.
She was the lady from Third Rock from the Sun, the tall one.
Oh, Kristen Stewart. Or Kristen.
No, the Johnson. Yes, yeah, Kristen, yeah, Johnson. The tall lady from Third Rock from the Sun. Yeah, she was.
Yeah, Kristen Stewart is not tall and she's much younger.
Yes, much younger. She can't seem to smile.
And she can't seem to find a vampire that doesn't sparkle. Yeah,
twinkly vampire girl.
Excellent. All right. So let's say you went to see Supertramp in concert. What is the guaranteed song that you know you're going to hear? What is their Stairway to Heaven song?
All right. My list includes Crime of the Century, School, The Logical Song, mm-hmm. Goodbye Stranger. However, my money is on Bloody Well Right.
Bloody Well Right is a very good choice because it was a very early song, Crime of the Century era.
And also feels like it's their theme song.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'd go one album later, a couple albums later and say Give a Little Bit. I feel like that would be in there as well. I clicked on the link for Supertramp on Setlist.fm, but I have not looked at it yet. Bloody Well Right, number one, 249 times played in concert. That's it's been a while since you've actually nailed the number one.
I've really botched it most of the season.
Yeah, but you got that time. And followed up by Crime of the Century School, surprisingly. Rudy, also surprisingly, From Now On. Goodbye Stranger is the first song from Breakfast in America, the highest one on the list, believe it or not. Then you get The Logical Song. Then you get Give a Little Bit. Ain't Nobody But Me and Dreamer. That's crazy. Take the Long Way Home is 11. The title track of Breakfast in America is 14, tied with Cannonball. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a very interesting order on these. A couple of covers. They do two Willie Dixon covers. I Just Want to Make Love to You and I'm Your Hoochie Coochie Man. Maybe probably as a two-part set, but not a lot of covers in their list.
But before we get into discussing covers, notice that you and I both picked songs from a similar era in music.
Oh, yeah, we totally did.
And
yeah, for the covers, yeah. Yes, we totally did.
And I think it's interesting that we, our two picks are really interesting compared to each other.
They are. And I'm liking yours a lot. Here is who I'd like to hear them cover. I'd like to hear them cover Silent and Running by Mike and the Mechanics. It's the Paul Carrick vocals. Can You Hear Me Running? Can You Hear Me Calling? That's such a great song that they could totally do something with. It fits their theatrical style. And even though you only get Paul Carrick's vocals in the original, you could do something kind of fun going back and forth between Rick and Roger's vocals. By the way, I firmly plant this into the era of Supertramp when they were getting along and the two of them were in there. So kind of the Crime of the Century, Breakfast in America.
I don't think we needed to. Did we need to express that moment?
Probably not.
That seemed to be a given when I was thinking of mine.
Yes. I agree. How about you? Tell me about yours.
So I picked a song that has all the elements of something that they would have done. It's poppy. It's got some musical differences. It's got a harmonica in it. It's catchy. Mm-hmm. It's got two voices.
Two voices work perfectly in that with this
and one. And they really work well together. And the song that I picked is actually Say, Say, Say by Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson. And I think that they could really Breakfast in America that thing up and it would have done an amazing job with it.
Yeah, that would be really good. A little Wurlitzer piano to open it up.
Yep.
Let's get to our set lists. This is where we pick five or so songs each that if you bundle it with their greatest hits album, and they've got a couple. They've got two volumes.
And I actually picked one of them just because I have to talk about the song. So
yeah, and that's totally fine. I limited myself to just that first greatest hits album, staying away from those songs. But because they put out a second greatest hits that was like a big all-encompassing retrospective, and it's everything. Yeah. It's it's unfair to use that as a wall that we can't get over. So
yep.
All right, my first pick is Babaji. This is from Even in the Quietest Moments. And it's a deep cut on a really, really good album. But it might be the best use of Roger Hodgson's specific vocal range. It feels very, very grounded and very deep as far as the song goes without being too poppy. I feel like the Hodgson-written songs are the Paul McCartney songs of the of the band, that they're the more sing-songy, the oh-blah-dee-oh-blah-da style. Whereas Davies' songs are more the John Lennon mind benders and stuff like that, storytelling. But it's a good album, a good track from a real good album. Next one is Gone Hollywood. This is the opening track to Breakfast in America. And Look, I love all of Breakfast in America, especially Goodbye Stranger. But since that's a single, I'm going to pick my favorite non-single from the album. And this one, just the way it opens that album is turn it up, test the limits of your speaker system, and just get enveloped by it. I kind of want to get that 5.1.
I was about to say, with that statement alone, you need to get the 5.1 and really cut your surround sound loose. And
I think I do.
And visit Breakfast in America.
Enjoy and taste Breakfast in America.
Find all the waffles and cheesy pancakes you can find.
Right. Oh, geez. Yeah, so that's just pretty much a Cracker Barrel, basically. Song number 3 for me is Even in the Quietest Moments, the title track from that album.
Is that what you are, dear? Your whisper tells a secret. Your laughter brings me joy. And a wonder of feeling I'm nature's own little boy.
I love the song, and I looked on the greatest hits. It wasn't there. It's on the retrospective, but it wasn't on the first volume of The Greatest Hits, so I felt like it was safe to go with. What's really cool is that it starts out as this really quiet, this quiet song with just guitar and Hodgson's vocals. And then just a bass drum kicks in. And oh man, it just gets me every time. I love it. I put this up there as far as songs that evoke emotion, like Kansas's Dust in the Wind and Fleetwood Mac's Landslide. Like it would fit right there in the middle of that 3-song set. On the other side of the spectrum is Better Days. This is from Brother, Where You Bound.
Trust me, I can help you. Feel free, we can save you. Join us in the good life and better days.
You nabbed Cannonball pretty quickly. Totally fine with me. That's a great song. And you beat me to School from, well, I'm not going to.
Wow.
I don't want to give up your whole list. I'm sorry. I just realized I was talking about songs that like I almost included my list, but I didn't because you included yours. So I'm just giving away all the songs on your list. But Better Days is one that I was surprised you didn't grab because it does feel like it's got that prog epic kind of feel to it. And it's a rocker. It's more of a rocker than.
And I thought about it, but there are other songs that I felt like would be good entry-level songs for Supertramp on top of their hits. Yeah. So, yeah.
Good point. The next one is Your Papa Don't Mind. This one comes from their self-titled debut.
Your papa don't mind at all. Getting old, it's getting late. It's soon tomorrow, so celebrate. Bring it out.
And it's funny because the way that he sings the lyrics, it's in the same melody as your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll. But he's like, your papa don't mind, da 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 da. And he goes into a different melody from there. But my mind always wants to go into your mama don't dance and rock. But whatever, I like it. And then I'm giving a bonus track this week, which I don't know. I can't tell you the last time I did a bonus track. But
he's so loose. I'm uptight. Your day and I'm night. Like two ships in the night in foggy weather.
You Win, I Lose, which was the single released from Some Things Never Change. Here's the deal. I was like, oh, you know, last albums, and they never go well. They're not going to be very good. The new album, or the newest of the albums, is really, really good. I'd even say it's better than Brother, Where You Bound in solidness.
I actually think it's better. It's better than Famous Last Words, too.
Well, it's hard not to be better than Famous Last Words. But it's really, really good. And this song is it would fit in perfectly on Breakfast in America or Even in the Quietest Moments or Crime of the Century. It feels like it's right from that era. So the fact that Davies decided to go back to that time frame of style for the newest album, it's like, oh man, okay, it kind of kind of wish that he was still doing stuff now, if this is kind of the last of the output. Cool. This is my six. Hammond, what did you choose?
All right. My first one is Cannonball. And admittedly, this is on one of the greatest hits albums.
You can just say what you want all day, but I've never been so outraged. Yeah, I'm washing my hands of you. How could you be
the
so
reason I've hold it up is I distinctly wanted to talk about the fact that it sounds like, and I feel like it should belong as the theme to a James Bond movie.
It's not just Thunderball you're thinking
of. No, I'm thinking
of Thunderball.
There's a moment in there where they actually seem to reference the James Bond theme even.
Dun, dun, dun,
yeah.
Dun. It's like they totally do pull that out. So yes, you're.
And so every time I've heard it, I've always thought of that. But I also think, you know, they could have done a theme song to a James Bond film. They're British. They got all the right, they check all the right boxes.
Do you think that bands ever released a song with the intent that it would make people think of James Bond so they could get tapped on the shoulder to do a James Bond theme?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. This song is better than View to a Kill.
Yeah. Well.
Come on.
Yeah, it's better than View to a Kill, yeah. But don't you touch Aha.
Oh, no. It's better than the one Madonna did for him. I mean.
Oh, okay. There you totally, yes.
So, I mean, there are choices in James Bond history that could have been Supertramp choices if they thought about it.
Yeah. Yep.
And then my second one after all of that is School from Crime of the Century. I can't pick Take the Long Way Home. So I'll pick this one because of the harmonica intro and how it builds in the song. With that 70s SWAT sounding guitar, that 70s wah guitar. Mm-hmm. So I've always enjoyed that sound.
I heard this song and immediately opened up the spreadsheet, added to my playlist, and saw that you had already gotten it. So I'm like, ah. So we're syncing up. I mean, we've been doing the show for so long that now our tastes are starting to overlap.
116 episodes in, and we're finally starting to see eye to eye.
Exactly, yes.
My third one is Soapbox Opera from Crisis. What Crisis? I love how this goes through all the different moods. And when he opens up vocally, it's pretty amazing because it shows his range and the strength of his voice. And this is long before the days of computer-assisted vocal touch-ups. So he's actually doing all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
My fourth one is Fool's Overture, which is from In the Quietest Moments. This is almost 11 minutes and it's super proggy and it goes through all kinds of different sections. The album has quotes from Churchill. It makes references musically to Holtz, Venus, and their own song, Dreamer.
The fact that they self-reference themselves and they reference Spider-Man. Like there's a mention of Spider-Man, but by the backing vocalist, not by the lead vocal.
Well, you know, Spider-Man's never been a primary character.
Never been a flagship or a symbol of a certain comic book company.
All right. And then my fifth one is Still in Love from Brother. This starts like it's like a, the soundtrack to a film noir movie. And then it just slides into this kind of jazzy feel and it stays there. And it's this pocket of jazz and it's amazing.
Mm. Yeah. This might be the song that made me think of Dire Straits with them, because it feels like your latest trick from Brothers in Arms.
It does, yeah.
Brothers in Arms, where you bound?
Ooh.
Brothers bound in arms.
The Sultans of Crisis. What crisis?
Good choices all, man. Those are great.
This was a super fun week. And I think a nice ramp out of the proggy-ness that was Porcupine Tree.
Yeah, you know, it was a relief week just because of the mayhem and cacophony that was Slayer and the unfamiliar but fun territory of Porcupine Tree is still unfamiliar. This was like a sinking back into a warm bath. It's like, I remember this feeling. I remember these songs and being able to kind
of... This is taking a bite out of a hot Cinnabon.
Yes. And yet now you want me to... Now you're making me want a hot Cinnabon. That's going to do it for Supertramp. But let's tell you about next week. Todd Snyder, who admittedly, I think the only thing that I really know by Todd Snyder is the Seattle Grunge Blues or whatever it's called.
Which is a fantastic song, but my favorite is the BRRRUN Beer Run.
Excellent. I can't wait to hear that in addition to all of his other stuff. So that's going to be fun.
It's already on my list, so you can't have it.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
You peed on that one already, huh? And I'm sure that other song is the greatest hit. So, look at that. That's literally the only thing you've added into your playlist. You probably just did it while you were talking just now, didn't you?
I did. No. I did it when I wrote the note like 4 months ago.
Oh. Awesome. All right. Well, that's our next week subject, Todd Snyder. So be here for that. In the meantime, reach out to us. We'd love to hear what you think. We want to hear your super tramp memories. Soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to use. On Twitter, we stuck a "the" in front of it. We're the Soundography because somebody else had Soundography and they don't tweet, but they're holding on to it like a Rick Davies held on to the name Supertramp. That Soundography is where we are on Twitter. Soundography.com is our website. You'll find all of our back episodes there. You can listen to everything we've ever released, at least everything that's not super secret for our patrons. Yeah, you want to support us? Get extra stuff? By golly, do it by going to patreon.com/soundography. But back on the website, you'll find our playlists, links to hear those on Spotify, a link to Amazon. I'm going to link to that big retrospective album of theirs, because even though I'd wanted to avoid it for greatest hits, it's still a very complete Supertramp album to get if you don't have any Supertramp. Leave us a review. We love hearing your positive reviews. Just post them wherever you get your podcast. It helps other people discover the show. And when other people discover the show, it works out for everybody. That's going to do it. Hammond, anything to say closing us out?
No, I'm actually looking forward to Todd Snyder. I'm probably more aware of his work than you are, but super excited to kind of be manhandled and listening to him all again, because I really enjoy his stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the time to give a little bit of a chance to Todd Snyder and his music.
Yep.
Snuck that one in. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.